chick flicks, romantic comedies, rom-coms. You love them, you hate them.
But we are here to eviscerate them. Welcome to the Rom-Com Killjoys podcast.
We are your hosts, Eliza Bertrand
and Janelle Walker. Now, let's get on with some feminist joy killing.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We are in the last week of October. We are celebrating Halloween and Fairy Tale Month at the same time. So at the intersection of these two things, we have a special offering for you this week.
Yes, I will make the case until I die that this movie is both a witchy Halloween movie and a rom-com and a fairy tale. Everybody can bite me if they disagree.
So many different things coming together. We're joined this week by the fabulous Maida Marston.
Hello. It's good to be here.
Maida, tell us a little bit about yourself for those who are just tuning in for the first time.
So I am a theater director, theater student forever, it feels like. And I seem to only show up on this show when we are wanting to celebrate a movie, so I seem to be less of a killjoy and more of the joy of this show. And I feel like at some point I will have to find a movie that I have some serious problems with to come on this show. Otherwise, I just won't fit in with the rest of the club.
Well, you know, we don't want to totally kill anyone's joy, so it's good to throw in a decent movie every now and then.
I'm just the one to pop in for a second.
So, Maida, what movie are we talking about today?
Today we are talking about Practical Magic, which I believe came out in 1998. And it is I will just say that aesthetically, it is like a crystallization of just like the most incredible 90s aesthetic, especially like 90s New England witchy. They nailed the entire design for the whole movie, and I think it's phenomenal.
Yes, it's cottagecore before cottagecore, and if that's your vibe, this movie, you must see it.
It's here for you, yeah.
It's here for you. And it's perfect for all of our 90s nostalgia as well. It's kind of been creeping into this decade.
Yeah, which I feel we all really need right now.
Yes.
A little happy nostalgia. So Janelle, why don't you tell us about the movie?
Practical Magic, the year of our Lord, 1998. Here is your Google plot summary. Sally, played by Sandra Bullock, and Gillian Owens, played by Nicole Kidman, born into a magical family, have mostly avoided witchcraft themselves. But when Gillian's vicious boyfriend, Jimmy Angelov, played by Goran Visnjic, a Bosnian or otherwise Balkan name that I can't pronounce, I'm so sorry, when he dies unexpectedly, the Owens sisters give themselves a crash course in hard magic. With policeman Gary Hallett, played by Aidan Quinn, growing suspicious, the girls struggle to resurrect Angelov and unwittingly inject his corpse with an evil spirit that threatens to end their family line. Well, while I totally disagree with how male-centric that plot summary is, that's what Google says this film is about. But my friends, my fellow witches, what is this movie really about?
Well, I also have a problem with it calling them girls. I feel like that's something I'm very much practicing in my own speech, is to call women women when they're above the age of 18. I will say young women, but I do think it's important to call women women and not girls all the time.
Yeah, it's hard to get that out of your regular daily vocabulary.
Well, especially because they have two small children in the movie, so it's like there's a distinction between like the two older aunts, Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman's characters, and then the two young girls that are actually in the movie. So,
yeah, Sally is a widow with two daughters, so I don't feel like you can call her a girl. That feels wrong.
It does.
Yeah, I will say this is a first on the show. I think I had not seen this movie, which is wild. I know, and Janelle had. So we don't very often get like my initial reactions to these movies, but I kind of expected this going in, but coming out of seeing it for the first time, I definitely was just struck by how much the movie was about the power of female connection. And, you know, and the movie, it's about a lot of different things. And I think tonally, we can all agree it is a bit all over the place. But what it's about is definitely the strength in women coming together whether that's with family or with community. And I think that that's really cool, and I'm excited to talk about that.
I think Janelle and I have watched this movie for the past 4 Halloweens in a row. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I finally bought it because I was like, I need to stop renting this movie. So we definitely know this movie quite well and feel a definite love for the characters and definitely the sisterhood and just like female relationships in this movie.
I think that leads me to one of my big questions about this movie that I'm sure listeners will have, which is, because I'm not just making this up. Okay, listeners, I have seen other people describe this film as a fantasy rom-com, so it's a thing. But I want to ask you two, I mean, what is it about this film that makes it a rom-com that also just happens to be about magic and witchcraft?
Well, again, tonally, this movie, it's like they couldn't decide on one tone, so they decided to have all of them. And weirdly, I think in a lot of ways that works, though, because it is about the complexities of life and female relationships and female identity. And I think that just narrowing that down to one tone and one genre isn't really inclusive of the story it's trying to tell. So I'm okay with the fact that it's all over the place. But in all of the different tones and genres that are mixed into this movie, you do have quite a bit of comedy. Like, there are funny moments and quite a bit of dark funny moments, you know, them trying to bring her now murdered ex-boyfriend back to life is a very funny scene. Even at the same time as it's quite dark. And obviously there is romance in here in a variety of ways. You get, you know, Sandra Bullock has 2 sort of great romances. One which happens quite quickly in the movie, but which obviously affects the rest of her life because it gives her her children and, you know, sets her on the path. And then one that takes up more of the actual plot of the movie. And then you get romance for Nicole Kidman's character in more of a sex and thriller kind of a way.
And I do think that it's nice that they show multiple like romantic relationships for Sandra Bullock, because I think very often it's like women, you have this one match that you're supposed to make and everything is like, doesn't count or doesn't mean anything until you have that one person. But Sandra Bullock gets 2 significant love interests, and like when her second love interest comes along, it doesn't invalidate the first one, which I think is really nice. I also, I think I was telling Janelle about this before, but I like it as a rom-com because I think so often in rom-coms, there's like this one relationship that you're plotting through the whole movie, and they have to throw in just like so many insane shenanigans to like get the movie to keep going, to hit that like 90-minute romantic comedy time mark. And with this one, they're just pulling so much double duty because in addition to kind of having this romantic relationship that builds both times for Sandra Bullock, they also spend all that extra time building the relationships between all of the women. And so like the relationships between the sisters and the aunts and the children, which I think is, there's just like a lot more happening in this movie, which is why I think it could be discounted as a rom-com. But I actually think that it really is.
I will say, I'm curious about what this movie is trying to say about love, because certainly, having only seen it once, when I finished, I was, you know, in the glow of like, oh, it ended happy and they got together. And then I sort of started to think, and both of Sandra Bullock's love stories, she falls in love, at least to a certain extent, with the person because of a spell, or you could argue that she falls in love with them because of a spell. And with the second one, she's aware and she still chooses to give into it, whereas the first one happens sort of fully without her realizing that magic was involved. And I'm curious what you guys think it's trying to say about love by presenting these love stories as these sort of aspirational, beautiful stories, but they were made to happen.
Okay, so here is my take on this. And here I'm putting in, I'm going way back to college and putting on my basic ass literary analysis hat. So just get ready. This is not going to be the most sophisticated thing in the world. But here's what I'd say. In the film, we get a triangulation of different kinds of love for Sally and her sister Jillian. The kind of magic that we see Jillian use for love is primarily about sex and manipulation and control, right? Like, we kind of get the sense that it's not just her like beauty that is enticing these men, but she is using a kind of passive witchcraft to entice people to her at all times, which we see, which the film is proposing is a negative thing because it brings her Jimmy Angelov and darkness and not true love, something that she's trying to kind of avoid, right? She's giving into that sort of like passionate love that the film seems to be a little bit critical of. That's the kind of love that gave their ancestor Maria over to the hangman's noose, right? Whereas with Sally, she falls in love via two different spells. The first is cast by her meddling bitty aunts. That ends in the death of her husband, per the family's centuries-long curse. But what I find intriguing is that the love that works in the end is due to the spell that Sally cast on herself, not on anyone else. It is the spell that she casts on herself and for herself. And I think that that's why I've always walked away from this story feeling like it has something like really beautiful to say about love. That's not only about like love is something that happens when you actualize your own understanding of your priorities and your needs, but also something that comes from already having a base of like love and support in your family and friends.
Yeah, I like that. As I was thinking about this and trying to come up with some answers for myself, I don't dislike the second love story just because it is forced upon the characters, right? Like they have this conversation where they're like, we both don't know if we could trust this because it might just be because of the magic. And then they choose to give into it anyway. And I was thinking that as I grow older and as I'm entering my 30s, I am thinking about relationships differently. And I have seen a lot of people in my life choose relationships for different reasons than they would have when they were 20, you know, and there's something to be said for saying maybe this isn't like the great sweeping love story of we saw each other across the room and instantly fell in love and, you know, and it was instant passion and we knew we'd be together forever versus choosing to commit to a relationship and put in the time and effort and, you know, decide that you both want the same things out of life. So decide to work together to achieve those things. You know, I think that's a different kind of love that isn't always portrayed in the same way in movies. And something about this, it, you know, sparked because of the magic, but they decided it was what they wanted and what was best for them and for their families and for each other. You know, and there's something sort of beautiful about that, even within the sort of strangeness of the spell being what begins it.
In terms of like the relationship between the cop, I'm not remembering his name right now, and Sandra Bullock.
Gary. His name was Gary.
I could not have told you that.
Nope. So I would have been like Peter, Mark, John, any of those white guy biblical names.
James.
But no, he says like all relationships have problems, which I think is like, yes, 100%. And it goes to kind of what you're saying. But I also think it's really nice that, you know, she has this problem with her first relationship where it's like, oh, well, my aunt's meddled and he's kind of the guy around the corner. So it's like, well, very convenient. You fell in love with this one guy in your tiny town who doesn't seem to think you're a witch and have a problem with it. And then the second problem is like, with the second guy, it's like, but you just came out of nowhere. So clearly, like, I enticed you here with some spell from our childhood. It's kind of like, well, you can always poke holes in a relationship. You can always look at your relationship and it's like, well, is it just because he was so convenient and he lived right next door? Or is this too random because they came from too far away and that's just suspicious? Like, I feel, you know, right. You can poke holes in anything. So I kind of like that he says that line. And I think that it goes to what you're saying that, like, yes, you can always poke holes in something and you know, figure out why it doesn't make sense. But it's really about the two people choosing to be like, we actually want this relationship and we're going to work through it and go forward with it.
And also, in some ways, isn't that what we all kind of want when you're single? You're like, I wish someone would just magically present the perfect guy and he would just appear in my life. And like, that's what happens for her.
Well, one of the reasons why it's been taking like nearly 10 years to drag me down the aisle is because I was like, my relationship's too convenient. Like, this guy lived on my dorm floor. Like, that's very irritating. I wanted something more exotic, not my neighbor. Like, you know, so I get that. I get that frustration. So, yeah, I just think it's funny. It's like, come on, Sally, you got to pick one. Either the neighbor or the guy from across the country.
Right. And like, he's here and he's ready and willing to love you forever. Like, just accept it.
And he makes pancakes in the shape of a cactus, which makes no sense.
I have no problems with the cactus pancakes, for the record. I think they're fabulous.
No, I think they're fabulous. I'm just like, did he use a mold? Does he carry a mold around with him to make these cactus pancakes? Because like, to freehand pour a cactus is like, That's, he's a witch too.
I don't have a problem with the cactus pancake pour. I have a problem with the fact that the whole plot of their love story hinges on him having one green eye and one blue eye, which he only has in the shot when she notices yes. he has one green eye and one blue eye.
Oh, one. And he's like, I was born with it. And I was like, wow, you think that she rejected you because of your eyes. It's so harsh. I don't know how you came back from that.
Like, when he first appears and she's, like, out in the garden and she dramatically looks up at him, I was fully, like, expecting him to be, you know, the guy with one green eye and one blue eye, and he just had two blue eyes, and I was like, oh, maybe
this is not the guy.
Maybe I'm reading this movie wrong. But no, they just couldn't be bothered.
Very true.
It's so funny, because I was looking through, as I often do after I watch a movie, the IMDb, like, goofs and trivia things for these films.
Oh,
and this
yes.
movie has so many inconsistencies,
oh,
so
no.
many, like, goofs. But the weird thing about that that is so funny to me is that I feel like there are so many, like, basic, and Eliza, you can speak to this more than I can, but some, like, basic, like, what's the word, like, script supervisor issues that they've had.
Mm-hmm.
But the production design on this movie, the details of the production design, especially the house that they live in, incredible. Just the tiniest details in the costume design and the kitchen. I mean, it's so
really
wild.
They built a whole house to film in. Like, they built the facade of the house and then the interiors to match exactly what they
wow.
wanted for this, like, magical house, and then deconstructed it after filming, which is the kind of thing that is quite expensive and time consuming. And then they clearly didn't take the time to, like, make sure there's not a boom mic in view. So I don't know if, like, the, you know, the head producers, like, handed it off at some point, or if they started to run out of money or time, but it's, there's definitely an inconsistency with, like, how well thought out the early stages of production are versus how clearly quickly the, like, rewrites and filming process happen. But somehow it all works, right? Like, it's a little sort of slapdash and haphazard, but it creates a really enjoyable movie.
Yeah, because it feels like they live in that house, which is really mm-hmm. fun. Like, everything is very practical, like how they use that kitchen space, which I love the element of domesticity that, like, travels through the entire movie, that, like, all of their magic is connected to,
oh yeah,
like, plants and to, like, cooking and to, like all of the different domestic arts, I think is really lovely, because it kind of, like, really solidifies that, like, feminine energy and kind of mm-hmm. heightens this, like, oh yes, of course, like, witches, like, you would use everything that you had around you. It's not like buying weird extravagant things, it's using all the things that are, like, right there in your kitchen, which I think is really awesome. Let's... Even when she grabs the whipped cream for the spell, mm-hmm. That's one of the
right.
funniest things. Also, when she licks it off of him, I was like, what? I was like, Sally, gross, my friend. This is a hairy man. Do not lick whipped cream off of his chest.
I mean, Maida, you undersell it. Yeah, he's a hairy corpse.
And he's not even her boyfriend. Which, oh, can I just say that this is also one of the best revenge fantasies
mm-hmm.
of all time? Because it's not, it is like, you, Sally gets to kill Angelov 3 freaking times. She poisons him, she beats him with a frying pan, and then she magics his ass to death and sweeps his ashes out the front door. And I know that every woman has, like, fantasized about killing their best friend's worst boyfriend.
True.
And so it's just, like, the perfect revenge fantasy, because it's like, oh yeah, you're not getting back at your own boyfriend, but you get to, like, just murder 3 times the guy who, like, messed up your sister.
Let's just add revenge tragedy to the list of genres for this movie. I'm so here for this.
Yes.
Right.
Revenge,
dark comedy,
fantasy, rom-com.
Romantic, fairy tale. It's everything. Piggybacking off of something you said there, let's talk a little bit about that intersection of domesticity and magic and feminine energy, because that's something that's really on display in this movie, and I think it's worth us, you know, taking a few minutes to look at.
Yeah, I think that the one of the things that's always drawn me to this movie, even since I was a little girl and fell in love with it, is that the word I'm about to use here is so highbrow, so please forgive me, but the magic in it is so, like, haptic. It's so of touch, right? Like,
yeah.
You can feel like it's something that you could do. You know, they're not spouting lightning from their fingers. It's very much of in, like, a hedge witch tradition, where magic is about setting intentions and drawing good energies to yourself and utilizing the inherent power of the earth. Right. And also the inherent power of strong relationships to manipulate your fortunes. And like that's something that really charms me about Sally's botanical shop, for instance, because she kind of throughout the film, people joke about how she's a witch and she has this store where she sells potions. And she always says like, no, I sell, you know, bath oils and hair products. But they are potions and they're also bath oils and hair products, right? Like it is, there's no difference. It's the same stuff. It's very, I would really be curious to hear what like practicing Wiccans and pagans think of this film.
I do think that that whole, you know, using the physical things around them and the earth and intentions is really on such good display during that final scene when they, you know, enact the elementary school phone tree and they call all the other suburban moms and they all show up. And it's such a great moment. It's so funny and it's so joyous, but they're all showing up and they're, you know, these are not witches. These are not trained women in this, but they are bringing that energy with them and having all of them there is what makes the magic able to happen. And I love the moment when the one mom, they were all told to bring a broom and she brings the dust buster.
That is fantastic. She's like, this is all I have. And they're like, bring it. It's amazing.
And it's so interesting because the concept of like the brooms having magic because they are used to clean and to sweep out the bad spirits or whatever. And so having this modern element of domesticity also be able to be used for that.
And they've already kind of told you that that element, like that the broom is part of their magic, because there's that one point where like the broom falls on the ground and they say company's coming. So like you have all those like little bits and pieces of like, oh yes, like this broom is a part of our magic, like what we use. And they have that big pot that like bubbles on the stove. They're constantly making God knows what in these pots on the stove. So they kind of like consistently use that. So when it shows up, it doesn't feel like, oh, they're witches. They use brooms. Like they already used it in a way that's not like so like cliche witchy.
Right. And I feel like they frequently reference company coming over and, you know, being open to people when that, you know, when the girls are little and the woman comes by looking for a love potion and it's the middle of the night, but the aunts immediately are like, okay, yes, we've got to welcome her in and we've got to deal with this. And, you know, there's this very sort of our house is open to strangers kind of vibe, which is
throughout the movie. They don't not get visitors because they're not welcoming. It's more that like everybody else is terrified. Which is why I also love when those women come over and the one like head mean girl of the moms is like, I just really wanted to see the inside of your house.
That makes me think a lot about everything that we've been saying just now. It makes me think a lot about the how this film sets up. I think it's because we see their ancestor Maria probably in what's like the 17th century. So we're talking about 300 years of women in this family and all of the men seem to be killed by this curse. So we're talking about like a fully matrilineal lineage. And I'm wondering about like how that struck you all, because especially after having watched so many of these fairy tale stories where they always kill the mother.
Also, they seem to have kept the last name through.
Well, I feel like they don't really get married. Like they have children, but I don't know if they get married. And I feel like that's maybe because they think that will tempt the curse. That's my read on it, is that they never actually get married because they hope to like fool this curse into being like, I don't love him. I still have my own last name. Which was probably a bigger deal, you know, in the 1700s, 1800s, early 1900s, until we get to this time.
Right. And no wonder the townspeople are like, they're weird.
Yeah, if these women just, like, take these men and have these two daughters, one with dark hair and one with red hair, seemingly every single time.
Yeah, we still once again get that dichotomy that we've talked about on this show before of the dark-haired girl versus the light-haired girl, right? And they even fall into, I think, fairly stereotypical, you know, the types, right? You get the more down-to-earth, straightforward, you know, dark-haired girl who is, like, at home and looking for a husband and raising her kids. And then you get the wild, flirty, slutty, light-haired girl who's, like, a free spirit. And I don't know why we keep coming back to that dichotomy in all of these movies, but we do.
I mean, it's a powerful trope. It's easy to play on, right? Because as soon as they show Nicole Kidman as a grown-up, Sally with her bangs and her glasses and her bathrobe in that first scene with them as adults, you're like, I know what this relationship is.
That this whole dynamic makes me, the more I think about it, sort of ambivalent about the film ends, how the film ends with Jillian, just because I'm not sure if what we're supposed to take from the ending is that Jillian has been kind of made into a reformed slut now that they've had to kill her boyfriend, or right. that she has chosen to be single and to be a sort of like mentor to her nieces the way that her aunts were a mentor for her. And I don't know, the film kind of leaves that a little bit ambiguous in a way that I wish that they had been a little bit more supportive of, like, Jillian didn't deserve mm-hmm. to be the victim of domestic violence, you know?
Right, because when right. Sally at the end is like asking her something, Jillian says like, what wouldn't I do for the perfect guy? So it does kind of like, you're not really sure where she's leaning on this, if she's going to go back to her old ways, mm-hmm. which is fine, or if she's going to like, quote unquote, be reformed. Yeah, it doesn't really tell you where she's going, right. so you kind of leave it not knowing.
Yeah, I feel like the movie's could be saying two different things, because on one level, like, she definitely is punished for being loose with yes. her sexuality, right? Like, she's punished for traveling the world and for sleeping with multiple men, and, you know, and then she ends up in this abusive relationship and has to come home and be saved. But at the same time, like, the movie continually, as it's talking about this matrilineal, you know, family, makes it clear that they all enjoy sex, right? Like, they, you know, during the Midnight Margaritas scene yes. when they're all yelling things at each other because they've been, you know, enchanted by the magical alcohol, they say at one point, like, since when has being a slut been a problem in this family? And the two aunts laugh and laugh and laugh. And there's a couple other lines too where I feel like it's implied that they are still, like, actively having sex
oh, yeah.
with someone somewhere. They just chose never to get married. So that makes me think that the movie isn't punishing Nicole Kidman long term. It's saying that, like, Jillian can still go out and, like, explore her sexuality and have relationships with men, and it'll be fine because other women in the family have done that and it's accepted. But it is a little unclear.
Yeah, I think they're hedging their bets and they're kind of like letting us read both ways, because her outfit at the end is also the most she's been covered up in the entire movie. It's like high collar, long sleeves, long skirt, like a very like a white color. You know, so she looks very like, I have reformed, like, I'm going to be good now. But so they kind of hedge it, because I feel like they want people to take whatever they want them. Like,
yeah, it's interesting because it's like a little edgy and offbeat and counterculture in the way that it's telling this story, but still like within an acceptable, like culturally acceptable yes. framework. And which, you know, I don't necessarily think is a bad thing, but it is interesting that in this movie, which, you know, I know so many people have taken as this, like, great female empowerment, you know, sort of film from their childhoods, but it doesn't go too past the accepted boundaries.
On that point, one of the things that I wanted to talk about with this film that I think maybe isn't so obvious on the surface is that there's a real politics of joy in this movie, even though it has its moments of darkness. I would really love to talk about the kind of, like, unironic, unfettered joy in the Midnight Margarita scene, and yes. in the scene I like to call the This Kiss scene, where Faith Hill blasts.
Yes.
I mean, let's talk about joy.
The moment that first yes. chord played, I was like, is this 100%.
Also, yes. I would recommend, if anyone hasn't seen this movie before, or if you just feel like giving it a rewatch, like, do it with a margarita in your hand if you are above the legal drinking age.
The joy when the two sisters hear the blender and realize that it's Midnight Margaritas just tells you so much about how often this has happened in their lives.
And the fact that the two aunts use their magic to blend the blender. Like, I love that they use the blender, but then they use their magic to turn on the blender. Like, that is also fantastic. But I also think what's really fun about that scene, Janelle, is talking about this joy, is that, like, you have these women, they're just, like, having a fantastic time. They're just, like, living their best lives, drinking margaritas at midnight. And then this, like, as Eliza called it, the, like, magic tequila that's in this margarita starts to get to them. And they just start saying some of the, like, most, like, horrible things to each other. They just start, like, ripping on each other. But they're still just, like, crying with laughter. And that's where that line, like, when has a slut been a problem in this family comes up. And it's just really fun, because even when they're making fun of each other, it's just like, oh, this is family. Like, this is, like, women hanging out together and, like, even being able to roast each other and have a good time with it, mm-hmm. which I think is really fun.
Yeah, it feels very authentic. And to be fair, partly that's because it is. They apparently, Nicole Kidman provided them with some very cheap
yes.
tequila, and the four of them got drunk, for at least for the dancing scene. I think the scene where they all start yelling at each other, probably they were a little more sober because that's a little tougher. But for the dancing scene, they genuinely just got completely sloshed on bad tequila and danced around. And it feels very, very authentic. Well, and it feels like moments that we've all had with our friends, right? Like, particularly with female friends. But I think with anyone who you're comfortable with, whether that's friends, family, whatever, that kind of, like, we're just going to let loose and we're going to say ridiculous things and we're going to be very honest and we're going to enjoy this moment because we're in a safe place. There is this just incredible yes. natural joy.
Yes, and that's the politics of it that I think I love so much about this movie, that even though it is a rom-com and ultimately what ties up the plot in some sense is a romance, because the sheriff, or not the sheriff, I call him the sheriff because he has a star, whatever, the detective, he kind of cleans up the mess for them, right? He's sort of the boyfriend in the machine that takes care of everything. Through the plot, the thing you're worried about is not whether our hero, heroine, protagonist is going to find love, because she already has it. And mm-hmm. I think that that is just like such a great feeling. It's such a reassuring thing to watch in this movie. And it's just such a feminist, like a meta-feminist statement in the plot that we're never concerned for Sally as like a widowed spinster.
Well, and part of her like even being okay with being in this relationship with this detective is that she finds herself slowly through the movie, right? That she's kind of always been ashamed of mm-hmm. being this witch. And she, it's very much like, I love how lightly it's kind of played through the movie, but it seems to be very much understood, and you get it in the audience, that she is the most powerful of these four witches. That magic just comes to her like so much more easily, but she's been denying it mm-hmm. for so long. And so as she kind of like moves through the movie, you see her become like more and more comfortable with herself, which, you know, finally leads to the final scene where they're all dressed up as witches and they jump off the roof. But she that becomes mm-hmm. comfortable with herself. And that's the reason why she's able to actually have this relationship with this man, is because she, you know, has her sister comes back. She kind of repairs this, you know, tension between her and her aunts about magic. She, you know, is more like loving towards her child. Not that she wasn't, but she embraces herself more, which I think is lovely.
Mm-hmm. Well, you get that moment when they're activating the phone chain and the women who work with her at the shop call each other and she says, I have great news. Oh, she just came out.
What a 90s joke. And, you know, and there's late 90s joke.
And it, like, it is, but at the same time, like, you understand what they're saying. They're happy for her finally embracing who she is, whether that is a not-so-thinly-veiled analogy for homosexuality or just the reality of embracing the truth about herself and her family. It is, like, she's rewarded for finding herself and feeling comfortable in her own shoes. I was just going to say, Janelle, I think the one thing that we really still have to talk about is what makes this a fairy tale.
You're on the spot now.
Okay. So hear me out. I actually, in preparation for this episode, did a little bit of reading about how fairy tales are defined by folklorists, because I'm an academic, right? I often turn to the academic definitions of things. Now, there are a variety of technical definitions for fairy tales, but for the most part, the distinction made between a fairy tale and a piece of folklore, for example, which we might otherwise put the spooky stories we hear about at Halloween into, right? The idea of vampires and ghosts and whatnot. I think that this movie is a fairy tale because it has the hallmark structure usually it's a young woman, but let's just say like a feminine person coming into their sense of adulthood in a dangerous world, right? A world where her husband was cursed and died, and she comes into a place of happiness through strife, through a confrontation with a supernatural force. And I think in the end, we also get a moral around that confrontation. And the moral is that at the end of the day, the power of female relationships and sisterhood are more important than the curse of traditional heterosexual relationships, which is really the subtext of Maria's curse, right? That the presence of men will mm-hmm. always, at least from the vantage point of the 90s, be a bit of a weight, a burden on women that keeps them from attaining their ultimate magical power.
I like it. I will also say, from a less academic standpoint, what I notice about this is maybe not in as tight a package, but it has a lot of the tropes that we typically associate with fairy tales. You know, you frequently get the main character wanting to escape their life or escape, you know, the small world they live in, whether that's Jack from Jack and the Beanstalk wanting to, you know, seek adventure, Rapunzel wanting to get out of her tower, you know, and then normally by the end, they have found a place in which they belong and are comfortable, whether that's Jack being happy to be home with his mother, Cinderella finding the castle where she belongs with the prince. You know, sometimes it's returning to the original place and sometimes it's a new place, but you still get this journey to find the place where you actually fit in. And I think that that absolutely happens for both of the sisters in this. And so on that alone, it has a very fairy tale vibe, even if it's told in a slightly different setting.
I don't know. I'm not huge on fairy tales. It's not always my favorite genre. But I do often think of the fairy tales, the like original writings of a lot of these fairy tales, as being warnings. Like they were told to children as warnings about the outside world. So I think that kind of aligns with what Janelle is saying, that in this being like a modern fairy tale, it is a lesson to women to kind of not forget about the women around them, and that like male relationships are fine and that they're good and they're part of life, but that the relationship you have with the women around you will always be really, really important. And so not to discount that.
Yeah. So I think we can safely put this into the fairy tale category.
I would also like to mention that Stevie Nicks recorded, I'm pretty sure, one, if not two songs specifically for this movie. So just like leveling up on the Halloween vibes, Stevie Nicks is also incredible.
It's been anointed by the Queen Witch herself. Well, I feel like that's a good place to wrap our conversation on Practical Magic on such a great note. Anybody out there who wants to fight us about the various genres we assigned to this film, hit us up on social media.
You mean all of the genres? Like, this fits into... Like, you should always every watch this genre. Movie because it fits every genre.
It's like the argument about A Nightmare Before Christmas. Like, is it a Christmas movie? Is it a Halloween movie?
Is it a comedy?
The answer
is
yes. Tragedy?
Is it for children? Is it for adults? Like, the answer will always be yes. Just watch the damn movie.
Before we transition to not our antidotes, but our sidelong recommendations for the excellent Practical Magic, we want to give a shout out to our romantic leads on Patreon, who we love and adore. Bob, Aster, Ian, and Trey, you keep us going. You fuel us with magical margaritas, and we love you.
And if you are interested in becoming a patron, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/romcomkilljoys. You can become a patron for as low as just $1 a month, which will allow you to vote in our polls and get access to some new fun content. So go check it out. All right. So as Janelle said, we are not necessarily providing antidotes this week, because despite this movie being about witches, it's not poison. So today we're just going to provide some suggestions for other content that you can consume to continue the never-ending joy of practical magic. Maida, do you have any suggestions for us this week?
Yes. So my suggestion is the movie Fried Green Tomatoes.
Ooh.
Yes. I think it's a fantastic movie. It's a much older movie, and it has Kathy Bates and Mary Louise Parker and a bunch of other like big actors and actresses. But I chose it as a recommendation for this piece because I was really trying to think of a movie that had really strong female relationships. And once again, leaning on the revenge fantasy element, Fried Green Tomatoes is an excellent pick. What I think is interesting about Fried Green Tomatoes, though, is that it hops back and forth in time, and you see two very different types of relationships. And one is more of a queer relationship, and so it pulls between like friendship and a queer relationship, and the relationship in a different section of the movie is kind of a like older, younger woman relationship, which I also think is really nice.
Well, Janelle, what do you suggest this week?
All right, I have a twofer, and much like Maida, I'm going for some hard 90s vibes. So earlier in the month, I recommended the author Francesca Leah Block and her riffs on fairy tales, and I'm recommending a different set of her books that were written in the 90s, and they are so 90s. It almost hurts, but it's actually very aesthetic, so please go with me on this. This book series is called Dangerous Angels, also known as the Wheatsy Bat series, and it's about about this woman named Weetie Bat and all of her magical friends in LA. And they live somehow in between this sort of 80s, 90s LA and simultaneously like the glamorous 1950s LA. And they do magic and there are ghosts and genies and witches and everybody's queer and has polyamorous relationships and creates found families. And it's just this like network of like joy and happiness and imaginative living in LA, all within this like really tasty, what's been described as magical realism or myth punk form. And
how have
just,
I
like,
never heard of this?
You should
this is
read.
Blowing
them.
My mind.
They're so.
This sounds amazing.
They're so good. They are so so good, and I cannot recommend Dangerous Angels enough. And then my companion with Dangerous Angels is a more contemporary recommendation, and I think it's a first for the show. I'm recommending a store. I want to recommend the excellent store House Witch, that's spelled H-A-U-S, House Witch, in Salem, Massachusetts. House Witch is a purveyor of magical objects, tinctures, spell kits, pamphlets, candles, housewares. It's an incredible place. The storefront in Salem I've never been to, but I've heard is just incredible. I know Maida's been there.
It's lovely. I had my tarot cards read there around this time last year, actually.
It's a magical spot, and they've created a really intentionally social justice community online as well. So you can find them on social media at House Witch, but their online shop is banging. Please go check it out. So my recommendations are Dangerous Angels by Francesca Leah Block and the store House Witch.
All right. So I also have a twofer this week, and they're both quite different because they're going in kind of different directions. The first one, something that I kept thinking as I was watching this, has in a lot of ways a lot of the same sort of themes and perspective on the world, although a very different story, is the Netflix TV show The Duchess, which is written and produced by, as well as stars, the comedian Catherine Ryan. And it's a show about, not a witch, but certainly a bitch. It is about a single mother who has a older elementary school age daughter and is a wonderful mother but kind of a shitty person, and it's about her trying to navigate the life of being a mother and being a single mother and raising her daughter and navigating her relationship with her ex-boyfriend, her daughter's father, and it's very good, very funny, and it's a lot about those interpersonal female relationships, especially that women gather around themselves to create a community when they are on their own, so to speak, especially when raising kids. There's, you know, there are interactions with the other school moms, very similar to the kind that you have in Practical Magic. There's a very close relationship between her and her 10-year-old daughter. It's got a lot of those same kind of themes, and it's a really enjoyable watch. Catherine Ryan is very funny. I also just in general recommend checking out any of her comedy because she's very no-nonsense. And it's just came out recently, like a month or so ago, and it's really good. Definitely go check out The Duchess by Catherine Ryan. I also, if you're looking for something more Halloween-y, this movie, as we said, plays with tone and genre a lot, and so I'm going to suggest something that similarly plays with medium, and that is The Wayward Guide for the Untrained Eye, which is a new series that just came out a few weeks ago. It's still coming out. That is both a podcast, a true crime podcast, and a companion piece YouTube series. In the YouTube series, you watch the characters create the podcast, so you hear the like cleaned up version of the story in the true crime podcast, and then you see them actually interacting with the people of the town and stuff like that in the YouTube series. And it begins as a straightforward crime true crime story, and then supernatural elements start to creep in. So far I've really been enjoying it, and it's fun because it's definitely a style of storytelling that I have not encountered before with this both podcast and visual element. So it's a lot of fun, and it's very Halloween-y. It's got great vibes. It stars a lot of really awesome YouTube personalities and stars. It's got like almost all of the StarKid kids. It's got Darren Criss and Dylan Saunders and all of them. It's got Mary-Kate Wiles and a few other people who you might know from Lizzie Bennet Diaries and some of those other types of shows. So the cast is great, and it's a really good October watch. So anyway, so those are our recommendations this week. I think that we've really covered the gamut there.
Yeah, I think we have. And I want to be the first to tell you both, happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Oh, it's also an Indian holiday right now. It's Navratri, so happy Navratri to anybody out there who celebrates.
Yes, indeed.
Well, Maida, as always, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on.
It has been amazing. Thank you for letting me be the joy for the Killjoys again this week. I really appreciate it, and hopefully next time I will stretch my legs and try to be more of a Killjoy next time.
We'll give you an absolute piece of trash to talk about next
time. Yes, give me something garbage.
Thank you for listening to the Rom-Com Killjoys podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to support us further, you can become a patron at patreon.com/romcomkilljoys.
Our theme song is Lady Slut Hitchhike Love by the band A Giant Dog, and the song you're listening to now is a cover of Baby Love by Colin Langaness.
Remember, Killjoys, don't let anyone kill your joy.
Not a rom-com. Not us.
Not anyone.
See you next time. Instead of breaking up,